We begin with school news. Another bus driver shortage has forced Chapel Hill Carrboro City Schools to cancel two bus routes this morning, affecting students who attend Rashkus Elementary, Glenwood Elementary, Culbreth Middle School, and Carrboro and East Chapel Hill High Schools. Chapel Hill Carrboro is not alone in this. WRAL reports driver shortages also forced Durham Public Schools to cancel five routes yesterday. Meanwhile, at UNC, officials yesterday reported yet another round of positive tests for lead contamination affecting 10 more sites, most notably Keenan Stadium, where lead was found in multiple kitchen sinks and drinking fountains. Other sites include the Forest Theater, the Ackland Art Museum, and, somewhat ironically, the Taylor Campus Health Building. 34 campus locations have now seen positive tests since the first one was reported at Wilson Library back on August 30th. That initial test was thanks to one UNC professor's summer project. With more on that, here's 97.9 The Hills, Brighton McConnell.
Drew Coleman is the chair of the Environment, Ecology, and Energy program at UNC, who also runs his own isotope geochemistry lab. While much of his time in research is spent studying some of the oldest rocks on Earth, he also helps coordinate a summer program with the university's environmental science fields. The program's goal is to increase diversity in the industry, and this summer, he was working with a pair of students from an early college in Robeson County. In a recent conversation with 97.9 The Hill, Coleman said the program landed on water sampling and lead testing as a good project option for the abbreviated program happening in August.
Water sampling right here on campus seemed like the right thing to do, and we thought it would be of interest to the students to see that they were drinking clean water at Chapel Hill while they were here.
Michael Sandstrom, a postdoctoral student who specializes in earth science, helped the early college students visit buildings across the UNC campus and gather water from different sources.
Once we had all of these samples, we took them back to the lab and separated out the lead, took them and ran them on a fancy instrument called a mass spectrometer, and were able to look at the lead ratios and lead concentrations.
According to both researchers, it didn't take long to realize their results were very different from expected.
Pretty much as soon as we started running them.
They ran like there was way too much lead there. We had deliberately prepared huge samples because we anticipated low, low levels of concentration of lead. And the samples were running like there was a lot of lead in the machine. And so we knew we had problems.
From there, Coleman emailed university leaders and alerted them of his results. Since then, UNC has taken up the reins of testing duties with the Environment, Health, and Safety Department, as well as some of its own environmental health students. It's unclear the last time the university conducted widespread tests for the chemical, likely because there are no federal requirements for colleges to complete those checks. The Environmental Protection Agency does, however, require that from public water systems. Starting with initial samples in Wilson Library in late August, which returned some traceable lead levels, UNC is now canvassing all its water fixtures. Seven more buildings returned detectable levels of lead just on Thursday, bringing the total to 34 buildings now with out-of-service drinking fountains or sinks until the cause is identified. Coleman said he's pleased the university is being very aggressive in its efforts to check for lead. He also said he feels a sense of accomplishment for the early college students who are partially responsible for this discovery.
I think that's the neatest aspect of the story for me, is that for years these students come in, they say, I don't know how to do science, I don't think I can do this, this is really complicated, I'm not going to understand it. And they always do. And in this instance, they came up with something that turned out to be really important as well, and I think it really connected with these two students.
While UNC is likely still in the early stages of figuring out its response to this presence of lead, Coleman had a clear answer to whether he's been in touch with other universities' faculty about testing for the chemical.
Yes.
For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Brighton McConnell.
Other campus sites that reported positive tests yesterday were Murphy Hall, the Evergreen House, the Coates Building, Mitchell Hall, Sitterson Hall, and the Old West Residence Hall. You can get the full list of affected locations on our website, chapelboro.com. Turning to election news, just 2 days left in the early voting period. If you want to cast your ballot early, you've got today and tomorrow to do it. Six early voting sites in Orange County: Chapel of the Cross on East Franklin Street downtown, the Seymour Center on Homestead Homestead Road, the Chapel Hill Public Library, Carborough Town Hall Complex, Orange Works at Hillsborough Commons on Mayo Street in Hillsborough, and the Eflin Raritan Club. Early voting all day today until 7:30 p.m. and tomorrow until 3 at all of those locations. And then, of course, Election Day proper is Tuesday of next week, November 8th. 3,030 Orange County residents cast ballots early yesterday. That's the most in a single day so far. Total number of early votes cast, 33,204 in Orange County. That's still slightly off the pace that was set in the last midterm back in 2018, though there was one extra day of the early voting period that year, and we are now beginning to catch up a little bit to that total. Other news, preliminary work continues this week on what's about to be a major construction project at University Place Mall, where our studio is located. Latest development on this, the University Place bus stop has been temporarily moved down the sidewalk a bit closer to Fordham Boulevard. It's now in front of the former city kitchen. Construction is also about to get underway at the Southern Human Services Center on Homestead Road, a four-month project that will affect some services. Starting Monday, the medical clinic in that building will be closed while the work is going on. If you need the clinic, you can visit the one in the Whitted Building in Hillsborough instead. Legal news, a local court has issued a ruling in a five-year-old case with big implications for how North Carolina provides for residents with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And the lawsuit claims the state government isn't doing enough to help people with disabilities avoid having to be institutionalized. And on Wednesday, Superior Court Judge Alan Bedour agreed, ruling that the state government is failing to act to a degree that violates its own law. Among other things, Bedour's order directs the state to get 3,000 people out of institutions and eliminate a waiting list for a special Medicaid program that currently has 16,000 people on it. An official with the state health department said the order could force smaller facilities to close, but no word yet whether the state plans to appeal. And finally, this week, more than 400 arts professionals are in town for the Creative Placemaking Leadership Summit, workshops, presentations, and performances to promote the arts and artistic placemaking in local communities. Earlier this week, I spoke with Chapel Hill Community Arts and Culture Director Susan Brown and UNC Arts Everywhere Associate Director Catherine Wagner. Here's part of what they had to say.
It's a huge deal. It's a really wonderful opportunity to bring, 400 folks to visit. It's really just 2 days of folks in placemaking, in public policy, in urban design, coming together to talk about ways that we can use the arts as a tool to create some change in our communities and to uplift those that are already in the communities doing the work.
We're talking about creative placemaking. What's a really good example of that in Chapel Hill?
I think of your recent efforts with Peace and Justice Plaza, bringing in some voices there to create that space with kind of a renewed vision, a place of free speech and of, public discourse.
I also think that the arts and culture team during COVID did a great job with great partnership and support from UNC Arts Everywhere. We did those vinyl art fronts in the vacant storefronts. We did more murals in a 2-year period than probably ever. And then pre-COVID, those pop-ups.
I was going to say the pop-up on East
galleries.
Franklin, yeah.
So I think that we've done some things, we've tried some things, but hopefully this conference being here is going to inspire even more.
That's Susan Brown speaking there and Catherine Wagner. Before that, get the full conversation in the This Morning with Aaron Keck section of our website, chapelboro.com. The summit began yesterday. It wraps up today. 6:20, your time. Time now for sports. Brought to you this hour by CIMG Residential Mortgage. First of all, UNC women's soccer got a dramatic win last night, beating Duke in a shootout in the ACC tournament semifinals. After fighting to a scoreless draw, Carolina won the shootout 7-6. Emily Moxley with the game winner. Now the top-seeded Heels move on to the final against 2-seed Florida State. They beat Notre Dame in yesterday's other semi, also in a shootout. The ACC final is Sunday at noon in Cary. That'll be televised on ESPNU if you can't get down there to the game itself. UNC field hockey won't have to wait that long. They're facing Virginia today in their ACC final, 2 p.m. up in Durham. Second straight year these two teams have met in the final. Carolina won last year to win their fifth straight ACC title, looking to make it 6 in a row today. UNC and Virginia also met just 2 weeks ago, and the Tar Heels also won that one 3-1. Also in action today, UNC volleyball on the road at Notre Dame starting at 6:30, UNC cross country at Virginia Tech this afternoon in the Hokie Open. And of course, UNC football is in action tomorrow on the road at Virginia. Quarterback Drake May just got named as a semifinalist for the Sean Alexander Award for the National Freshman of the Year, and he's going to have to bring all that talent to bear in Charlottesville, where Carolina has historically struggled. With your preview, 97.9 The Hill's Michael Coe.
For all the disappointment the 2021 football season brought to Carolina fans, 2022 has made up for it with pleasant surprises. The Tar Heels, who began the year picked to finish third in the ACC Coastal Division, now sit atop the heap at 7-1 overall and 4-0 in conference play. And despite being unranked in preseason polls, Carolina sits at number 17 in the first edition of this year's college football playoff rankings, which were released Tuesday. But according to head coach Mack Brown, all that notoriety comes with a price.
We've gone from being the team that nobody talked about to the one now that's got the target on our back. So we're going to get the best out of four good teams for the next 4 weeks, and that'll be a fun challenge for us.
The first of those four teams will be Virginia, who hosts Carolina in Charlottesville this Saturday. The Cavaliers have struggled in their first season under head coach Tony Elliott and suffered a heartbreaking loss in four overtimes against Miami last weekend. Virginia's defense remained a bright spot, as the Cavaliers have not allowed an offensive touchdown in their last two full games of football. UNC offensive coordinator Phil Longo said the defense's multiple and varied sets present a unique challenge for the Tar Heels.
They give you enough of everything else that you have to work against everything, and you've got to be prepared from an assignment standpoint against everything. So this week, you know, maybe probably the biggest concern after just looking at them last night and this morning is a little bit of the multiplicity that they have schematically.
Helming the Virginia offense is senior quarterback Brennan Armstrong. Carolina fans are sure to remember Armstrong's name, as he threw for more than 550 yards against the Tar Heels in Keenan Stadium last season. Armstrong also accounted for four total touchdowns in UNC's last visit to Charlottesville in the 2020 season, an upset victory for the Cavaliers over a then-ranked Carolina team. Though Armstrong has struggled in 2022, UNC defensive coach Gene Chizik said he is still high on the lefty's abilities.
He's a threat. And offensively, they've had some moments where they go up and down the field, right? I think probably inconsistency would be what you see the most. But when it comes to him as the quarterback, he is the same very talented, very skilled guy that's got great open field mobility and scares you as a runner.
Carolina won last year's meeting with the Cavaliers, but had dropped four straight to them before that. As for Brown's record in Charlottesville, it's fair to say the Hall of Famer enjoys other road trips more. Brown has never won a road game at Virginia. Perhaps the most famous of those games came in 1996, when number 6 Carolina blew a 17-3 fourth quarter lead and fell 20-17 on a field goal in the final minute. A 95-yard pick six by the Cavaliers sparked the rally, which sent UNC to its second loss of the season. Still, Brown shrugged off the idea of a Charlottesville curse.
I've never lost or won a game. Players do. And that's it. And then people talk about curses. Half of this team's never even been to Charlottesville. And we're talking about 1 week not carrying over to a next. 1 year. Or the curse from 1996 damn sure doesn't follow. Some of these weren't alive. So, I mean, I couldn't move on without that being an issue in my life.
If the Tar Heels can break Brown's curse, they would need three other games in the division to fall their way to clinch a trip to Charlotte for the conference title game. And while fans will be on the lookout for results from Duke, Georgia Tech, and Miami, Brown dismissed the notion of scoreboard watching.
You start talking about the scenarios in the Coastal, none of that matters. You got to be good enough to win. If you win, it takes care of itself. If you don't, it takes care of itself as well. So if you're good enough to win the Coastal, good for you. Go prove it. Don't talk about it. We don't need scenarios. We need to win.
For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Michael Coe.
Kickoff time is noon. Coverage on 97.9 The Hill begins at 9 a.m. with Inside Carolina Live. Also this weekend, UNC men's soccer continues its run in the ACC tournament. Quarterfinal action on Sunday as the Tar Heels take on fourth-ranked Syracuse in New York. Carolina will be the underdog in that one, but they do have a big weapon on their side. Junior midfielder Tim Shells just got named National Player of the Week by United Soccer Coaches after racking up 4 assists in just 2 games. And UNC swimming and diving is hosting South Carolina in a meet tomorrow starting at 10. Tar Heels just added a new member to the coaching staff, Javier Sosa, who spent the last 3 years coaching in San Diego. Finally, in hockey, a win last night for the Carolina Hurricanes, 4-3 at Tampa Bay, also in a shootout, just like UNC women's soccer. Canes are back home tonight, hosting Buffalo at 7.